What if everything you thought you knew about happiness was wrong? For millennia, humans have pursued this seemingly simple emotion, yet its meaning has transformed dramatically across time. Once considered beyond human reach, a divine gift bestowed only upon the fortunate few, happiness has evolved into something we now consider our birthright. This revolutionary shift continues to shape our politics, culture, and personal aspirations in profound ways we rarely recognize. The very languages we speak reveal this ancient connection between happiness and chance. The English happiness derives from hap, chance, French bonheur from air, luck, and Greek eudaimonia connects good fortune with divine favor. Our modern expectation that we should all be happy represents one of humanity's most radical and recent innovations. What being is there who does not desire happiness? Socrates asked, transforming what was once considered hubris into humanity's highest pursuit. In democratic Athens, where citizens govern themselves with remarkable equality, philosophers began to challenge the notion that happiness lay solely in the hands of capricious gods. Socrates proposed that happiness required more than pleasure. It demanded disciplining desires toward genuine good. Plato described an arduous ascent, from loving individual physical beauty to beauty in general, then to beauty of mind, and finally to pure beauty itself. This contemplation produces a moment when life is worth living, a sort of intellectual ecstasy where desire is satisfied and happiness flows forth. Aristotle approached happiness more practically, defining it as an activity of the soul expressing virtue, while acknowledging popular conceptions: prosperity, friends, wealth, children, bodily excellence, fame, honor, good luck, and virtue. Yet even Aristotle concluded that the highest happiness comes through pure contemplation, a godlike activity, superior to the human level. For most people, true happiness remained unattainable, barred by birth and circumstance. By the 4th century BCE, happiness had become philosophy's central goal, though earlier approaches had raised unfulfillable expectations. Epicurus and Zeno addressed this by focusing on alleviating human pain. Though seemingly opposed, Epicurus championing pleasure while Zeno emphasized virtue, both schools converged on desire management. Epicurus defined pleasure as the absence of pain, achievable through sober reasoning and strict regulation of desires. He taught that our necessary desires are minimal. The Stoics sought happiness through alignment with universal reason and virtue, dismissing the relevance of pleasure and pain. Cicero claimed the virtuous would remain happy even under torture. Both philosophies shared a radical formula: happiness equals satisfied desires divided by total desires. By limiting wants, they ensured satisfaction. Unlike their predecessors, Epicurus and Zeno extended their path to happiness beyond the elite, welcoming all humanity, including women and slaves, into their vision of the good life. Christ's Beatitudes offered a revolutionary vision of happiness by embracing rather than avoiding suffering. Happy are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Happy are you who are hungry now, for you will be filled. Happy are you who weep now, for you will laugh. The Diary of Perpetua, an early Christian martyr, shows how believers transformed suffering into divine favor. She described dreams of climbing a towering ladder past dragons to reach heaven, an immense garden where a shepherd gave her milk so sweet she tasted it even after waking. Such visions of paradise sustained the faithful through extreme hardship. Augustine's journey led him to a crucial insight when, despite his success, he observed a content beggar achieving with a few pence the peaceful happiness that had eluded him. He concluded that true happiness must be eternal and unshakable by misfortune. For Augustine, happiness meant having and enjoying God within one's soul, though he acknowledged this remains incomplete in earthly life. Christianity thus positioned happiness as beginning in this world, but finding its fulfillment only in the next. Medieval views of happiness ranged from martyrdom to mystical transcendence until Thomas Aquinas introduced a revolutionary concept, imperfect happiness on earth alongside perfect happiness in heaven. This dual vision maintained divine primacy while legitimizing earthly joy, asserting that human nature retained natural goodness despite sin. The Renaissance reinvigorated classical happiness philosophies through intensive scholarship. Humanists recovered lost manuscripts and translated works of Plato, Roman Stoics, and Epicurus, bringing ancient wisdom back to European consciousness. Renaissance thinking transformed the perception of sadness from an inevitable consequence of sin to a treatable condition. Martin Luther, shaped by his battles with melancholy, promoted Christian merriment as divine service. He reimagined the world as a pleasure garden for the soul, where earthly joy became both godly and defiant of evil. The Enlightenment redefined happiness from divine perfection to an attainable human right. This shift was epitomized in Thomas Jefferson's Pursuit of Happiness and the French Revolution's aim for happiness of all. The Abbé Pestre's question, "Does not everyone have a right to happiness?" was revolutionary for its time. Material progress enabled this transformation. Stronger nation-states, improved agriculture, and expanding trade created prosperity. Europe's population surged from 120 to 190 million in the 18th century, with longer lifespans and wider access to consumer goods like Brazilian coffee and West Indian sugar. The greatest happiness of the greatest number became the Enlightenment's guiding principle. Jeremy Bentham attempted to measure pleasure through six criteria, but acknowledged its limitations, noting, "One man's happiness will never be another man's happiness. You might as well pretend to add 20 apples to 20 pears." Jean-Jacques Rousseau challenged this utilitarian view, arguing that happiness wasn't mere pleasure, but a single and lasting state. He warned that progress, by expanding human desires beyond their means, could transform happiness into unhappiness. It is by dint of agitating ourselves to increase our happiness that we convert it into unhappiness. The Romantics challenged the Enlightenment's optimism by rediscovering suffering's transformative power, viewing it as inherent to human existence rather than unnecessary. Joy became central to their worldview, not as mere happiness, but as a profound force intertwined with despair. Schopenhauer, the quintessential pessimist, saw his contemporaries as deluded in seeking permanent satisfaction. He argued that suffering stems from our internal will to life, an endless, blind force of desire that can never be fully satisfied. His sole comfort lay in aesthetic contemplation, particularly music, which offered temporary relief from desire's endless cycle. Our modern condition embodies this paradox. Despite dramatic improvements in life expectancy and material comfort, happiness levels have stagnated since 1950, with 60% of Americans reporting being happy while depression rates climb steadily. Where God once represented happiness, happiness itself has become our deity, often as demanding as its predecessor. Our culture remains caught between the belief that humans are meant to be happy and mounting evidence suggesting otherwise, making happiness both our democratic ideal and our most elusive pursuit.